I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. It's time again for a look at sports with our very own Tony Cox. And Tony, it seems like baseball news is year-round now.
It is, Farai, but this year's topic is hotter than ever. The steroid scandal is, well, on steroids, it seems, and keeps getting bigger. That's topic number one on today's Bloggers Roundtable. Joining us are Dee Will, who writes for the blog Sports on My Mind, Justin Grant posts for Alpha Sports blog, he also writes for Reuters, and Greg Lee is online sports editor for the Boston Globe. So hello, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Let's start with the Rocket. Here's some quick background for people who may not know what's going on. Roger Clemens, of course, widely considered the greatest pitcher of this era. And when his name showed up on former Senator George Mitchell's recent report on steroid use in baseball, Clemens didn't just deny that he had ever used performance-enhancing drugs. He got downright indignant about it. Then Clemens secretly recorded a phone conversation with his accuser, Brian McNamee, and played it at a press conference this week. Now, McNamee, of course, is Clemens' former trainer and claims to have injected the seven-time Cy Young Award winner with anabolic steroids and human growth hormones over a three-year period beginning in about 1998. So here's a bit of a very ambiguous recorded telephone conversation that Clemens had with McNamee. The voice you're going to hear is McNamee.
I never thought it was right, but I thought that I had no other choice, put it that way. And I think that when I spoke to you guys, that I laid that out there. And then I was sick. I was in the hospital. Talk to Kenny. I was thrown up. I was, that was me. I could deal with that. You know, I could deal with that. But, you know, whatever you want to do, just let me know what you want me to do.
So here's the very latest thing. The congressional committee that was supposed to look into this matter next week has now postponed that hearing to next month. And Clemens is expected to be the star witness. So there's all the background, D. Will. What do you make of the way Clemens is handling all of this?
I think Roger Clemens is actually taking the Lance Armstrong approach. If people remember, when Lance Armstrong, the cyclist, was accused of using steroids, he went on the attack against his accusers, and he pulled out all the stops, used the press, used lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. Clemens, a fellow Texan, is doing the same thing. Other athletes have bowed to the pressure and have said, yes, I used, or kind of have fallen silent. Clemens, on the other hand, has taken an aggressive approach. Does that mean he's guilty, innocent? It means neither. It just means that's the approach he's taking.
How do you see it, Justin?
Well, I listened to the recording that he played at that press conference the other day, and to me it was a strange tactic that him and his lawyers employed there, and to me it made him seem more guilty. If I stood accused of the things that McNamee accused me of using the steroids over that period of time, and he asked me, what do you want me to do? It's obvious what I want you to do. I want you to admit to the world that you're lying and that you never injected me with steroids. To me, that recording made Roger Clemens look more guilty.
Well, let me ask Greg this then. How does this play out, or how do you think it will play out coming up to the congressional hearings where it looks like Clemens is now going to be expected to testify under oath?
Well, I think it's what's going to end up happening is, you know, like with the Lance, I agree with the Lance Armstrong, you know, with he had the resources to pay for lawyers and pay for PR and do what the attack that Clemens is doing. I think Clemens at the congressional hearings will just, you know, hear, if they ask the direct question, he has to answer, did he do it? And that's going to be something that he's going to say, he probably would say no. I mean, I think he would. I mean, because you would say he didn't do it. He may say, you know, someone may have put it inside of him, but technically he would say, I didn't do it myself.
Well, is that the Barry Bonds defense?
It could be the Barry Bonds. It definitely could be the Barry Bonds defense. I just think, you know, he's going to, you know, with Roger, he has the resources. Unlike Marion Jones, who didn't have the financial resources to defend, like, you know, like what Lance Armstrong has done and what Roger has done so far, I think that's what's going to happen.
All right. Okay, let's move on. Golf, anyone? Last Friday, Golf Channel anchor Kelly Tillman made a comment that has some people up in arms. Now, during the telecast of the PGA Tour's opening event, she was bantering with co-host Nick Faldo about Tiger Woods and his competition. Here's a bit of what they said.
To take Tiger on, well, yeah, maybe they should just gang up for a while until...
Lynch him in the back alley.
Yeah, that's right. And then
So, in a statement that was released on Monday, Tillman said that she used some poorly chosen words and that she has apologized directly to Woods. Now, it looked like that might be the end of it until Al Sharpton, among others, called for her head. Now, the Golf Channel responded by suspending her for 2 weeks. So what do you make of this, Greg?
I just think that it's just one of those unfortunate instances that happened. I look at it this way. I look at it that what, and I'm not looking at the statement. I'm looking at what are the, you know, the background in terms of the management system, management there. Is there any diversity there? Is there any true sense of, you know, people of color in the management decision making there? Because this always happens. Unfortunately, you know, with Don Imus and that. So, if I was to get the background of the station, the background of the company, of things that happened of this sort, and if it's any reflection of the game of golf, I'm kind of afraid for what I'm going to get, what type of answer I would get from that.
What do you say, D. Will?
I feel that it's more than an unfortunate incident, and more than just a slip of the tongue or she misspoke. I can, off the top of my head, think of 10 different things to say than use the word lynch. Mm-hmm. If Tiger Woods were Jewish, would she say, take him in a back alley and put him in a gas chamber? Okay, and what would the reaction to that be? I don't have any ill feelings towards this woman, other than that it is the language of privilege, and I do not have any respect for someone who uses that language.
So, Justin, if she made a mistake, how big a mistake do you think it is, and what punishment, if any, do you think is appropriate in this case?
Well, I've listened to that clip over and over again, and it was a quick statement by the lady there. But I tend to agree with D. Will. There's certain buzzwords in the English language within the media that nothing good can come from you using them. Nappy-headed, Hitler, lynching. It was a poor choice of words, especially for somebody that's an anchor. But I think that in this instance, the suspension is it's a good enough punishment. I really don't believe that she was trying to be malicious. She was foolish, but I'm fine with the suspension.
All right, let's move on. Another NFL playoff weekend looms ahead, and Jessica Simpson is still getting plenty of press because of her thing with Dallas quarterback Tony Romo. But nonetheless, we've got the New York Giants at Dallas, Jacksonville meeting New England, Seattle at Green Bay, and San Diego at Indianapolis. So what's the most intriguing matchup here, do you think, Greg, and what's the do-not-miss game?
Well, I still think it's going to be the Jaguars and the Patriots. I just think it's going to be very interesting to see how the Jaguars, with their physical type of run offense, if they're able to run the ball with their two-headed monster of Jones, Drew, and Taylor, and try to keep the Patriots, offense and potent offense off the field, which will be a tough task. And I think a lot of people would say the Patriots were romping them, but I still like to see, the Jaguars are a tough team that came off, winning, beating Pittsburgh twice in Pittsburgh, and I think that they are. This is going to be an interesting test for the undefeated Patriots.
Well, I think you're right, but I think another very interesting test is going to be the Giants at Dallas. What do you say, Justin?
Oh, absolutely. And, it's funny to me. Headed into last year, you look at last season, Peyton Manning, all the pressure was on him. Now it's all on his little brother, with Peyton Manning finally having won his championship. And I think the big question heading into this game is which Eli Manning is going to show up. He's put up 35 points against Dallas in the season opener. He put up 35 against Bill Belichick. Last week he was 20 for 27 with no turnovers against the Tampa Bay Bucks. Can Eli stand up to the pressure and put up those type of numbers going into this playoff game? If he can, I think the Giants definitely have a shot. Dallas is coming into this playoff game. They're not really playing all that well. The Giants are on a roll. They have a lot of confidence. Let's see what happens.
Well, D. Will, you're in Vermont. They don't have a professional football team in that state, but you're close enough to Boston to perhaps root for the Patriots. But what do you do when you're in a state where you don't have a team? How do you find one to root for?
Well, let's see. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and our family's had season tickets to Redskins games for 25 years. So I'm a diehard Redskins fan. I do appreciate what the Patriots are doing, having gone undefeated in the regular season. And I agree with Justin and Greg about both of those games. And actually, I find all four games very intriguing because all the teams that are playing each other are connected in some form or fashion, whether it be San Diego and Indianapolis and San Diego's complete lack of fear of Indianapolis, the Mike Holmgren tie to Green Bay, and the connections that were made by Justin and Greg, what they spoke of. And so all four of these games are can't-miss games in my estimation.
All right, let's close with this. We've got a couple of minutes. The BCS. It takes hits every year from fans who don't like the outcome of the national championship bowl selections. This year, no different. Even if you're an LSU fan, you might not think that the shellacking of Ohio State in the title game was what you would call good football to watch. And now there's talk of a playoff, possibly. And here's the thing. It's being pushed by folks who used to oppose a playoff in college football. What's going on here, Greg?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to complain because I am a Louisianian, so I'm not going to complain about LSU winning a national title. But it's so funny that the University of Georgia president, who was against it, now became a victim of not being his team, the University of Georgia, not being placed in a national title game. But the bottom line was with Georgia, they didn't even win their own division, so they didn't deserve to be in a national title game. With that being said, Ohio State, you know, the Big Ten, they do not want to have a playoff system because it works perfectly for them. They have a pretty, you know, weak conference that they can, you'll go undefeated or lose one game and get to go to a national title game every year and take their chances going in the game. So they didn't want the system to change because, look, Ohio State made it a national title game the last 2 years, regardless of what the outcome is. But for, you know, for a lot of other, you know, conferences such as, you know, USC got screwed out, I think, this year. I think they could have played LSU, and I think it would have been a great game. Look, Illinois shouldn't even have been in the Rose Bowl. It should have been, you know, Missouri in that game, or Georgia, for that matter, but tradition won out.
We have less than a minute. Let me ask you, Justin, do you think this is ever likely to happen?
I'm on the fence. I can't call it. The thing that will lose out here if they do put a playoff system in place is what happens to the intrigue of the regular season. That's the beauty of the regular season in college football. Theoretically, the national championship is on the line every week because if you lose, it can seriously cripple your chances at getting into that championship game. So the regular season would lose out, the intrigue of it. But we all know that championships should be decided on the field of play, and a playoff system would definitely be the most suitable way to do that.
Let me give D. Will 10 seconds to say, do you think a playoff is likely to happen, yes or no?
I'm not really sure. As long as the Big Ten and the Pac-10 hold sway with the Rose Bowl, it's going to be difficult to institute a playoff system. However, if enough large conferences, Big 12, SEC, ACC, Big East, do want to if they can put that pressure on, there will be one.
All right.
Right now, I don't think so.
We got to stop right there. Gentlemen, thank you very much. You can find Justin Grant's post at Alpha Sports Blog. D. Will writes for the blog Sports on My Mind. And Greg Lee is online sports editor for the Boston Globe.
Thank you, Tony.
Take care.
Take care.
That was NPR's Tony Cox.